Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. All right, let's take a moment and talk about strong coffee. You know, we've mentioned this before. We have it all the time. And let me tell you, as a person who used to be like a little afraid of collagen and unsure of what it could really do because it was still so new, once I started actually using it myself, you could really then see the benefits. And the thing about strong coffee is that they have a complete collagen protein from grass-fed and grass-finished cows that really helps to support healthy joints, tendons, muscles. And on top of that, it's going to support hydrated skin, hair, joints, and just help you to be so strong and feel so good within your entire body. And of course, it tastes delicious. So go check it out. The link is in the show notes. So just go ahead and go into the show notes, click the link, use code OPTIMAL15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order and try out strong coffee.
All right. And our next guest to the podcast is going to be Laura Hyman, who's an international yoga pioneer and physical therapist focused on evolving the practice of yoga to empower movement and balance amidst a modern lifestyle of technology and sedentariness. With an advanced degree in physical therapy and more than 25 years of yoga practice and education, Laura is redefining the modern practice through her comprehensive LYT method, emphasizing smart alignment, functional movement, and spiritual wellness. So Laura is a physical therapist and yoga instructor who actually does a lot of instructing for yoga instructors themselves. So she does get a bit in-depth and a bit clinical about some of the positions and some of the anatomy she talks about. But if you've ever done yoga, if you've ever taught yoga, this is just so important for you to listen to as to how you can start applying that practice to your daily life a little more mindfully and a little more functionally. So let's dive in. All right, we're diving into our next interview with Laura Hyman, who is a physical therapist and a yoga instructor. So Laura, could you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners?
Sure. Hi, you guys. I'm Laura Hyman, and I am a physical therapist as well. I've been teaching yoga almost as long as I've been a physical therapist, for about 25 years. And I just discovered yoga a little bit kind of by chance. When I was in a running club, they offered free yoga, and I joined thinking it was going to be about stretching and kind of chanting or whatever. And it was a power yoga class, and I just fell in love with it. And started practicing on my own and began teaching it soon thereafter. There wasn't a lot of yoga at that time. And so I just immediately, I was already teaching and exercise classes like step aerobics and hip hop. And so I just added that to my repertoire. And then I just began to learn more and more. And, you know, here I am 25 years later. And over that time, I've tried different styles out and then ultimately developed kind of my own methodology based a lot more on my physical therapy background, specifically the neurodevelopmental training that I received post-graduation.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that little bit of a background. I read one story on your website that said, I think it was when you were 18, you decided to run a marathon without training. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where that mindset comes from?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a triplet with two identical brothers. And then I have an older brother who's 2.5 years older. So it's not to say that growing up with boys, like you're trying to keep up with them all the time, but I definitely had more experience. And especially at that time period, I mean, when I was growing up, my brothers could play Little League, for example, and there wasn't a similar league for girls. So I would remember sitting on the sideline, like with a sourpuss, like, why can't I participate? And so I was always in the mix with them. And my brothers and I always ran with them. And so I was pretty fast and I became a pretty good runner. And in high school, I joined the cross country team. And right after our season was over, I can't remember who came up with the idea, honestly. I think my brother probably said to me, hey, do you want to run a marathon? There's like this marathon in, you know, 3 weeks. And I said, sure. And so the two of us ran it. I think we had probably run maybe 12 miles at the most, and we just did it. And you know, of course, 18, I think you can just, besides just in your head, your body, you can just will your way through something. But it was in those like last 4 miles that I really remember, and I actually wrote about it in my college essay, like this feeling of, this is my mind here that's going to take me through. My body is going, but my mind is the one that's either telling me I can't do it or yes, I can. Mm-hmm. And so it's either going to make me or break me. And that mind-body connection, it was like so revealed to me in that day. And really, again, like I wrote my college essay about it, because I feel like we often are our own worst enemy, you know, by the way, oh, this is so hard. I got to walk. I got to do this. And, you know, sometimes that is a real feeling, like your heart is pounding or your joints are hurting. But often it's this perception that when things become challenging, we don't meet the challenge. We kind of talk ourselves out of it or don't think we have that capability. So I think a lot of it was just like stubbornness and that mental wiring of just like, I'm going to do this.
Oh my God. So much. Yes. Like that's what we talk about all the time in terms of really getting back into that mind-body connection. And I know that you talk about like one of your principles in your teacher training is based around neurology and using, you know, a different kind of brain mapping. Can you talk about that and how can people start to understand what that even means, especially if you're thinking yoga? Like, how am I thinking? I'm just trying to learn the poses. I'm trying to teach people poses. So how is that related to what you're bringing in with the nervous system?
Oh, well, there's so many layers to that. But the first is just the way we've moved our whole lives. It's like we've created our own mapping. So in the old days, we used to have paper maps. We would open up, you know, to take us from this state to this state or whatever. And all of those intricate county lanes, highways, and all that are similar pathways in our brain. You know, so the superhighway would be the one that we are habitually using the most. And habits are what we do enough times that become unconscious. Habits don't have to be bad. We can have really good habits. Habits will always be there. So in the yoga practice, what I ask people to do is investigate how they're moving. And if the movement they're doing is out of a habit that is actually long-term not going to benefit them. And you can't just like hop off that super highway. You have to start a new path. And then very consciously, very deliberately, you got to use all these other resources, like your own hands as feedback or your visual vision. You're physically thinking about flex at your hips, like all of these different techniques to go down a different pathway that long-term probably will be a lot better. So mm-hmm. for instance, if somebody's leaning over to the floor and they're always doing it by rounding in their back because that's what their body allows them to do, that is a habitual movement. But long-term, we know that's not going to be serving them. And you take that into a yoga practice where you're moving a lot faster maybe or moving through different poses. And that unconscious habitual movement is, again, really not going to be good there. It's not efficient for the body. It's not efficient for the joints or the soft tissues. So I teach people in a variety of ways. Sometimes I call it like going in the side door. Like they don't even realize they're doing hip flexion because I'll have them like in a plank and walk their hands back to their feet. So they're deepening into hip flexion, knee flexion, ankle dorsiflexion, but not doing it in the way that superhighway would do, which is like folding, you know, straight up from a standing position down. And mm-hmm. so we can, you know, we can choose different pathways. It's like it and apply to life. It's like if you've been acting in a certain way and you start to recognize like, actually, this isn't really kind or this isn't really benefiting all people the way I'd like it to. You choose a different way. And it might be challenging because it's not like your reflex. You know, it's not necessarily an easy choice right away. You have to think about it and put energy into it. But like movement over time, you can adapt to a different way of movement in all the ways. So I look at the way I teach yoga as an opportunity to investigate the ways we're moving that are helping us and the ways we're moving that are not. Mm-hmm. And so kind of redefining what yoga is, which is ultimately raising consciousness. It's like being awake. So moving from an unconscious habit is like the opposite of that. Yeah. But people don't realize it until you point it out. So I feel like I'm an educator as an instructor, and hopefully giving people the tools that they can then create better pathways of brain mapping.
I love that. That's honestly so similar to what I tell people as well. It's not like I'm fixing you or doing anything. I'm giving you tools to teach you something different, to create a different change within your body. And when people get new experience and they're able to awaken this awareness of the body, it's able to do so much. And, you know, it's frustrating to hear when someone says, well, I went to yoga, I tried that and it didn't work for me, you know, or I went to PT and it didn't work for me. And, mm-hmm. and it's just like you're saying, if you can go to someone, hopefully where you get a little bit more hands-on or a little bit more teaching, you're able to awaken different areas. It's not just moving through movements, but it's being intentional in starting to come back to different pathways within your body.
Exactly. And that's what I often say when people say, well, you know, what else does yoga do for you? I'll get asked these magazine articles like, can you comment on how yoga can lose weight? And it makes me grimace. So I always reframe it. And what I say is, whether or not it makes you, helps you lose weight, what it often does is helps you pay attention to what you're doing, what you're eating, how you're acting, how you're reacting. And that is the thing that I'm really going after, is the paying attention and the awareness. And the practice on the mat is just that. It's just a practice that fuels the everyday moments. And if you're eating better because of that, then that is usually the side effect, because mm-hmm. you're just, why would you want to pay so much attention to moving well, breathing well, and then go eat crappy stuff? Like, it just isn't consistent.
Mm-hmm. I think you're touching into some really, really important things and principles as a provider that we should be paying attention to. And just as people, you know, not focusing on the movement because of what it's doing physiologically, but just the behavior and committing to our bodies is just as important. And it's just going to then make us make those decisions more and more down the road. And so, especially what you talked through with neurology, I think that brings us kind of around to the point where the yoga you do, or the LYT method of yoga, is the first yoga method that's kind of backed or based in this physical therapy approach. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that brings to this, you know, practice of yoga that may have been missing?
So I was practicing a vinyasa practice, which is kind of classical vinyasa, has its own blueprint. And parallel to that, I was working with very involved stroke patients. And the philosophy with neurodevelopmental treatment is that instead of teaching compensatory strategies, like somebody has, you know, a hemiplegic arm, we would put it in a sling. Instead of doing that, we would actually weight bear on that arm and perhaps even put the opposite arm in the sling, forcing the use. So forcing the brain to recognize and start to fire more on that hemiplegic side. And I would do all these things on the ground with my stroke patients. And, you know, P.S., a lot of them were older, 40 years or more older, but we're on the ground and we're doing quadruped and we're crawling, doing half kneel. So all these, it's all based on developmental patterning, because developmental patterning is, you know, what we did when we came out of the uterus. You know, no baby gets a map of like how to move, you know, just we figure it out. And that process of figuring out is our development. You know, we go supine, prone, we get on quadruped, we go to half kneel, and then we become bipedal. And so that process is very specific to developing the proximal muscles so that we can support ourselves. And so we do this in neurodevelopmental treatment with our stroke patients, knowing that they've had a brain injury that is affecting their motor cortex, but that we can go back to these hardwired patterns and tap into the brain through that. And I started seeing, you know, huge changes in my stroke patients. And simultaneous to that, my own yoga practice wasn't really changing that much. And in fact, I started feeling kind of some rotator cuffy tendon-ish stuff. And I started thinking, why don't I start doing more stuff on the floor? Like I'm teaching all these, like if they can get better and they're coming from a much more debilitated state, what could happen if we start from this place of like, I'm you know, a kind of a normal state of motor function. And I just tried it out on myself and my practice just shifted in a huge way. I integrated core right from the beginning, established neutral pelvis right from the beginning. And I just kind of made this map, like this method, like assuming that people are going to come into a practice with some kind of inherent imbalances. And in fact, in a yoga regular, like the traditional vinyasa are just in probably going to exacerbate some of those. You just get on the mat, you start flowing right away. You're just, again, going to move into the imbalances more. Mm-hmm. But if we had this opportunity to what is called the reset, we can reset and reestablish it. Then we're going to have a fighting chance of promoting better movement patterns. And so I started doing that and I had a small studio at the time and long, you know, very loyal clients. And some of them were like, I don't know if I like this, but I'm going to go with it. And then like a month later, like, why the hell isn't everybody else doing this? You know, they were just like so into it. And so I just really saw firsthand how it changed my own practice. And then these clients that had practiced with me in other ways. So I just have refined it and created more of a template that I can then teach others. And again, it's assuming that everyone is coming in with some sort of imbalance. So usually, you know, if you don't, like, as we know, as physical therapists, you look at the pelvis because it's so in, like, it's our grand central station of energy exchange. And if it's tilted in some way or rotated, it can have an effect up or down the chain. So if we get that more in a neutral position, we can get our glutes firing better, our deeper abdominal wall activated, and then we can move with our hips, not moving from the pelvis and the spine. So I teach unafraid of using that terminology and educating people so that, like, I'll have clients who say, oh my gosh, when I was doing this in my garden, I was thinking about what you say, you know, and that's what makes my heart really swell. It's like, okay, I'm teaching them in my past. I'm passing on this body knowledge, not by being afraid to talk about the body, because that's what we're doing. And our body and our mind and spirit are inherently linked. Yes. And the brain is a huge part of that. It's amazing that we have this capability to change. It's kind of sounds hokey, but the brain is really loves novel situations. It loves dynamic environments. We do best when we're learning and evolving. And so I think that I just am creating like an ecosystem for enhancing the mind, the body, the spirit, all of it.
That is so beautiful. And we just did a PT Pearl not too long ago, actually, on developmental stages, which is so funny because this is the most common place that people miss is coming back to the ground, coming back to, you know, you talk about proximal control, which is the core. And people think of the core as the six pack, you know, but realizing that it's our proximal stability, meaning it's our entire trunk, and actually learning how to support through it before we go into it. I think those are, you touched on one of the most common injuries that I hear about in yoga, which is the rotator cuff. It's the shoulders, because in typical vinyasa flow, you're continuing to go through
chaturanga.
Yes. Like, oh my God, how am I blinking? You know, and people just dump right forward into their shoulders. And do you see, like, are these really common injuries that you see very often? And do you see it changing when people actually adapt your style?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have someone right now, I'm in my second round of online teacher training. And this woman was in my a workshop that I led in Dublin in February. And then she joined this online training now. So I was February to now. And she was an Ashtanga devotee. And in Ashtanga, I don't like to bash other forms, but I just, you know, some of it is like, okay, people, like, this was developed by one person. Critical thinking. Like, I'm always into that. Like, let's not put anybody on a pedestal or in some kind of holy box and think that it can't ever be questioned. Mm-hmm. So Ashtanga has, in my mind, a lot of imbalances inherent in it. And the way that they teach is that you jump back right into Chaturanga, which I find really problematic for a lot of reasons. One, it's like, you know, it's kind of like a Hail Mary, like I'm hoping I'm going to jump back and be able to land and have the humeral head not drop down into some of these passive restraints and hope that the rest of the core is going to be really strong as my elbows, I'm landing with bent elbows. So I train people to jump through plank and then lower with control so you can access the eccentric control of the triceps. You have much more control lowering without just jumping right into bent elbows. So she's a great example. Like, she was doing all this Ashtanga. And a lot of people, when they jump right into Chaturanga, they figured out, their brain figures out, I'm going to get more stability if I kind of pop my pelvis up, like the booty pop up. Mm-hmm. And so they're just like squeezing their elbows in, humeral heads dropping down and pelvis up. It's really off. Like, it's hard for me to witness. Like, I'm sure you guys are the same way. Like, I'm just mm-hmm. like, I get this, like, mom, I always say mama doesn't like that. but she was really willing to listen. And I said, this is actually the way I'm going to teach you to do it. You're going to actually be a lot stronger. What you are perceiving is strength is not actually strength. And ultimately you're landing on structures that are not made to decelerate your whip mass. So use your core to help that. Use the eccentric control of the triceps. And she showed me the other day and she's like, my gosh, this is so hard, but so much better. Mm-hmm. So I also kind of say, like, lower your knees. There's nothing like less than about lowering the knees. You're just counterbalancing and taking off some of the weight of the pelvis, but that's way superior than letting those humeral heads dive down. And there's nothing great about that. So I kind of reframe it. And I think a lot of people love that. And then there's always the people that are really, you know, rigid. And those, I always say, the people that are rigid and naysaying, it's just a reflection of what's happening internally. Mm. If somebody's having a hard time letting go of something and you know, holding on to it, that's a lot more about them than it is about you as a teacher. So I teach my teachers, like, tell people what the benefits are. You don't have to demonize something or say this is, I really try and stay away from wrong and right and more say, like, this is more optimal. Mm-hmm. This is more sustainable. This is going to get you stronger because you're actually going to work on the scapula stabilizers versus just, you know, a Hail Mary on your glenohumeral ligaments and capsule of the shoulder. So I tell them the reason why and how it's going to help them. And a majority of the people are very excited to learn.
I think that no matter what we do in life, when we start with the why and start with the actual purpose of why we're doing something, we will grow so much more astronomically than if we just do something because that's what's put in front of us. And I'm really enjoying a lot of the messaging that you're talking about a sustainable practice, actually teaching people, you know, giving them the tools to understand. I think that one thing that you said that it kind of made me smile because I know that when patients or clients say, like, oh, I did this at home and then I heard you in my ear telling me to engage here or do something different. Like, that just makes you smile as a provider because you know you're impacting the behaviors. You're not trying to have them come to you and say, oh, I'm fixing you up. You're educating them. And so I think it's really valuable in this practice of yoga that you actually focus on educating, not just getting people to mimic the movements that you're doing. And so that's very cool. Within the sustainability of your practice, we've had some people who've talked to us about different poses, whether they be headstands or backbends or things like that. Have you taken out poses or done things to make this practice a little more balanced and sustainable? Or can you talk to that a little bit?
I took out, so for instance, wheel is like the full backbend where you're on your hands. And I love it. I think it's a wonderful pose. I don't think you can throw it in every single class, especially in a general public class. What I do is I have a, and I always say back bend in quotes because, you know, it's really axial extension and opening the spine in a balanced way, not just moving where you can. So that takes a ton of preparation. You got to open the anterior pelvis, you know, get that hip open. You've got to get openness in the thoracic spine and extension. That's usually obviously limited for a lot of people. You've got to get the shoulders as well open because there's a huge degree of flexion there. And there's a lot involved in preparing for a wheel pose. So that's a pose that I do teach, but I do it specifically in a class only that have prepared for it. Like traditional kind of vinyasa, you just kind of throw it in there willy-nilly. And for me, I always say, you know, going on Netflix and choosing something randomly is great. You can do that. With movement sequencing, everything to me should have a purpose, especially if I've got an amount of time and I'm really working on the education part. It's not like I'm just throwing in poses for the sake of having them. So I always have a theme in a class, and that really, really guides me. So I actually just taught a class called Liquid Spine. And it's not that our spine is liquid. It's actually, I told people, like, what we're actually trying to do is have quite a bit of stiffening around it so that the energy exchange goes through there. But then once we understand how to move the spine as a unit, not just throw back the cervical spine and extension or sink into the lumbosacral area, but to really use it in a uniform way, then we can feel that it actually has this beautiful hydraulic quality to it. So all of my, you know, my themes don't necessarily have to always be about anatomy either. But getting back to your question, I do think that deep hip openers, and again, I say that in quotes, because hip openers, when people think hip openers, they automatically think deep external rotation, front splits or something like that. But almost always they're thinking of some kind of external rotation, frog pose, all this stuff, or malasana. And I just think that if somebody doesn't really understand how to get their pelvis in a neutral position and mobilize the hip in that place. So a neutral position means that the femoral head is coming up and it's in the acetabulum in a centrated way, meaning it's not tipping forward or back. So for a lot of people, if they try and get hip mobility from that place of non-neutral pelvis, they're pressing onto some of the structures that are not going to feel great, the labrum, some of their articular surfaces. So I reframe some things and talk about mobility a lot. Oh, I know you guys are going to love that. You know, like I got to ask a question about, you know, long holds or passive holds and yin yoga and stuff. And I'm like, personally, I don't like it. Yin yoga to me is asking you to stay in a pose 6 to 8 minutes with having some kind of hold. And it's hard to do. And like frog pose, for instance, for 6 to 8 minutes, a lot of people, they're going to sink right into their labrum. So there are poses I'm always like, cost benefit. Like, what is the benefit? And can I get it somewhere else without the potential cost? So I'm always about, what does it feel like? Not what does it look like? Yoga has become a very visual thing. There's nothing wrong with that. We get a lot of feedback from vision. But what I really preach is copy skips understanding. And I say that to my teachers. You know, I said, anybody can get up there and regurgitate a class, but it's skipping the understanding of why we're moving in a particular way, why we want our core integrated when we're mobilizing our hips, why we need more hip mobility and less movement from the low back. So I would say any of the kind of quote unquote extreme poses I don't teach publicly. And because, you know, most people don't have like Jen's background, you know what I mean? Like in range of motion, getting to the in range of motion, they're going to really do something else to try and get there and to copy it. So what I try and tell people is like, work within your body to feel like you have space in the joint, and control, the feeling of that you're in control, that you're not just going for, you know, some execution of a pose. So I think, long answer to your question, I really emphasize functional movement, mobility, core integration. And most of the time that doesn't line up with really big movements at the hips, like a split or a frog pose or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm also not a big fan of putting weight on the cervical spine because, you know, honestly, so many people's heads are off centered and putting weight down through the cervical spine is not going to feel great. So I stay away from teaching headstands, plow pose, which I call shoulder stand. And I think what are the benefits to those and how can I get them elsewhere? So I came up with this thing called what I call happy squat, which I didn't name it that. One of my teacher training groups did because it feels so good. And it's opening up the back fascia, that whole posterior chain, which would be what a plow would be doing, but you're doing it with weight bearing through your feet. And you're leaning, you walk your hands back and you lean your ribs onto your thighs and let your head release. So you're getting that same shape, but you aren't putting weight down in the cervical spine. And instead you're getting, you know, weight bearing through the feet. And I love a lot of the weight bearing stuff because you get so much extra bang for your buck.
Yeah.
So those are the main ones. I do try and, and when I say that to people, almost I haven't met anyone who argues with me to keep those poses. Many people are relieved. They're like, oh yeah, I never really liked that pose. So that's the other thing I try and ask people is like, you don't have to wait around for me to tell you that that might not be the best pose to do. Like, listen, and if you're feeling weird stuff, things that don't feel right, you know, that you're not kind of in control of your body, those are all signals. Our body's always communicating if we listen.
Yes. I mean, this is such an important message. And it, like you said, I think especially with social media, yoga has become more about that visual aspect and needing to get that pose because of what it looks like or what it can look like. And we get away from actually listening to our body. I remember even teaching anatomy at a yoga teacher training, and one woman, she could do lotus full, but when we actually checked her hip range of motion, she had like zero external range of motion. So what she was pulling from was her knee. And if you're going to go run after that, you know, it's just, it's creating an imbalanced unit within our body. And it's just striving to get the pose because of what you want the end result to be, exactly like you said. So I really hope that people take this in, start listening to their body, not just what it's supposed to do based on traditional, you know, what you see for yoga, but what you feel in yoga and what it can be, because it's just, it's such a better experience in the body when you're actually listening and feeling. So your message is just so, so spot on.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I know that you are doing some things online now, doing some trainings online. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I had developed a 200-hour online teacher training because before the pandemic, fortunately, even like I already had that in the works. It took about a year and a half to develop. And I did that mostly because I wanted to reach people that I knew were following me or taking my classes online, but would not be able to fly anywhere, take 3 weeks off, et cetera. So I created this online teacher training, which is, I'm very, really, really, really proud of. It's very robust. I've had now over 350 people take it. And over 50% of them were already existing yoga teachers, 200 or 500 hour. And across the board, they've all said that nothing that they had taken even was a drop, like in terms of the functional anatomy and movement. Mm. And I intertwine the philosophy too, because I think it's, you know, all part and parcel. It's like the way that yoga has been kind of deified and put on this like holy scribe, isn't really doing anybody good, because they're not even really looking at, again, the sources of where some of this information came from. So what I ask people to do is like really apply the philosophy in their modern day life and in their teachings and in their practice. And so I run this, it's a 10-week program. And so each week essentially is about 200 hours. There's 10 core classes, and those core classes are made by me and that all the teachers get access to. So this is just kind of like a rubber stamp approval, because what I've seen over the years is that there are people that graduate from teacher training, and even if they have a pretty good idea of anatomy, they lose, for some people, it's just not natural how to sequence something, mm-hmm. how to build up to something. And so what I tried to do is check all the boxes where people were feeling like they didn't have a complete program. And so in doing this, I give people these 10 flows, and I say, you know, this can be up-leveled or down-leveled. You could do this for seniors over 70 years old, or you can do this for like intermediate to advanced practitioners. And I ask them, you know, what would you do to this flow for each of these kind of populations for their own critical thinking? So I'm going to give them some stuff, but I don't want to obviously just give them everything, you know, just they have to think about it. And so people have just been just love the program. It really is about empowering through education, mm-hmm. because across the board, no one feels good about teaching something that they don't understand, like underneath the covers, you know, it's like, might look good on superficially, but if you don't understand at some point, it just doesn't feel fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And at worst, a lot of teachers are ready to kind of throw in the towel because they just, you know, don't know enough about the body. So I feel like this program is just so beneficial for anyone, whether they're going to become a yoga teacher or they're already a yoga teacher and they just want to know more and they want to know and understand my method as well.
Yeah.
I think that it is a testament that a lot of the people coming to the training are already yoga teachers. Mm-hmm. And it just shows that there's people that are hungry to understand and hungry to keep learning about their body and not just about a specific technique. So that's amazing. If you are interested at all, you guys got to go check that out. We will link that up. And also, you're on social media, so they can find you on Instagram and anywhere else?
Instagram mainly. That's really where that's takes out about all my leftover energy.
Yeah, I get it.
I have
it.
Online yoga classes. It's called the Lit Daily, LYT. LYT stands for Laura's Yoga Technique. And because I always also describe, like, I really want everybody to feel more lit up, because I feel mm-hmm. like when you're you guys know this, when you're moving well, you have more energy. If mm-hmm. all of a sudden it's like you just got an extra 2 hours of your day when you move better, because you're not losing that energy by not like having good posture or good mechanics. And so people do, they are always like, I feel more lit up. So it was really nice. The acronym worked well. But lityoga.com is where you can find all that information out, the classes and the yoga teacher training.
Awesome. We'll link that up. Well, thank you so much, Laura. We love talking with other incredible physical therapists who are just spreading this message in a different way as well. It's not about modalities. It's not about me fixing you. It's about, you know, empowering through the tools. So you're doing just that. So thank you for being another voice out there who is leading with so much heart, compassion, and knowledge.
And getting people all lit up.
Yeah, thank y'all. You're adorable. And thank you for all the work you're doing. It's really so amazing for the general population and then specific athletes and all that to just, again, educate and that we have so much of the power within us if we just know how to move our bodies better.
Yes, 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 yes. All right, well, I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.